Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 63.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. Today I'm going to jump straight in because Josie sent us a ripper series of questions on the topic of striving. So today we're going to try and tackle them all in this one episode. But first of all, I'll get Kelly to share Josie's backstory because we think it's one that will resonate with a lot of you.
Yeah. So Josie said, I've been a striver my whole life, always jumping from one goal to the next without stopping. Always having to get straight A's, etc. So in the last year or so, I've done a lot of work to address anxiety and depression. And as part of that process, I reached the realization that my number one motivator behind my constant striving was my need for approval from other people. So from always doing well at school, to my choices at uni, to my achievements at work, I was always looking for someone to say, yes, you are a legitimate and successful person who is worthy. She goes on to say, of course, you can probably guess that I was never satisfied because I didn't really like myself that much. So any external approval I got for all my hard work wouldn't actually make a dent in my self-image and I would just set myself another goal. So now I've made this wonderful realization and my self-esteem is the best it's ever been in my life. Yay. Yay, Josie, I agree. And she says, I've suddenly been left with a weird emotional hole where I no longer know what my motivation is to strive anymore. I'm just happy to cruise along and be mediocre because I feel I am good enough as I am. And that feels very weird. So a lot of people responded to Josie's this thing when she posted it in the group. And I'm so pleased that she shared it with us because I do think a lot of people feel this or have experienced this. So Josie asked four specific questions, and so we're going to speak to those four questions. And the first was, do you think it's important to have goals in life and to strive, or is it just as valid to meander along? Carls?
So I think it's perfectly fine to meander along. In fact, I'm quite jealous of people who have the ability to do that. I can't think of anything more wonderful than being very satisfied by your work and your family and your home life and being able to sit down on a Saturday afternoon and read a book and chill out without feeling those feelings of I should be going for a run to improve my fitness, or I should be reading that book that I meant to read for the podcast that I'm recording this week, or I should be starting that blog, or I should be starting that business. I think there's this incredible and admirable peace that people who meander through life have that I think is fantastic. I think the trick is that you need to be satisfied. So if a person is satisfied with their life, it doesn't actually matter if they're striving or they're cruising. I have come to accept that I'll never be satisfied and that's just the way I am. I'm a very grateful and very happy person, but I will constantly be wanting to do and achieve more. But I think that people who are on the opposite end of the spectrum, that's fantastic as well. And I think as long as you're paying your bills and not being a total resource suck, I believe quite strongly that if you're able-bodied and have the physical and mental means to contribute to the society you live in, it's your duty as a human to do so. I do not approve in any way, shape or form of people opting out and relying on other people to support them or relying on other people to make things happen for them, completely against that. But if you have a lovely job that pays your bills and you like it and, you know, you can come home at the end of the day and feel very satisfied with that life, then you can do whatever the hell you like as far as I'm concerned. And I am so jealous of you. That's one thing that I would really like. And I think, what was it, that word that you used? It wasn't a character flaw. It was a character reality. Is that what
character
you called
reality.
It? Yeah, that's my character reality. I'm never going to, I used to work in a bead store when I was 19 and I absolutely loved it, but it didn't pay enough money for me to do the things that I wanted to do. And I wanted to write and I wanted to act in plays and I wanted to do all this other stuff. But I always fantasized about how lovely my life might be if my whole world was just going into this bead shop every day and helping people make beautiful jewelry and, you know, teaching people how to bead and make stuff. And there was a lady who actually worked there and that was her life and she loved it. And her husband worked in a jail and he would come home at the end of the day and they just had this wonderful, beautiful life that I just thought was extraordinary. And I was a little bit sad that that was not something that was available to me because of my character reality.
That's right. And I think that, yeah, you got to tune in with your character reality. I think I like having goals in life and I like striving. I don't think it's important to have goals in life and to strive. I think it's important to have meaning. And meaning is a bit of a weird one because people are like, well, what is the meaning of life or what's meaningful to me? And we spend a lot of time looking for the things that are meaningful when most of the time we're actually already doing them. So like, I derive meaning from helping people. And yeah, I learned this a few years ago and it was a very useful thing to know. Like, my personality type likes helping people order their lives, basically. And so I get to do that through my writing. So I derive a lot of meaning from that. But I also derive a lot of meaning from raising kids who I think are going to be amazing people. So I think we spend a lot of, and Mark Manson's actually written a lot of a post about this where, you know, he's like, everyone's looking for their meaning or the meaning of life when they're actually pretty much already doing it. You just, you know, but we do tend to disregard those things because we think, oh, I can't make a living out of that. So therefore, it's not meaningful. It's like, yeah, you got to forget that. Meaning is derived from something that makes you happy and makes you feel like you're contributing. Because humans like to feel like they're part of something bigger.
Yeah, definitely.
So anything that you're doing that allows you to feel connected and part of something bigger is bringing meaning to your life. And yeah, so that's what I feel like. Rather than goals and striving being important, I think just ensuring that there is meaning to your life is important. All that said, for me, a large part of my identity and self-worth is tied up in being a striver. Like, I self-identify very strongly with being a striver and I'm a very goal-oriented person. So for me to have meaning, I need to be striving. And, you know, so that's up to Josie. You need to, I think you might be in a spot right now where you're just like, I'm just in this place and it's really nice and I like it and I'm a bit freaked out at the fact that I like it.
Yeah.
Don't be freaked out. Just enjoy it. And then things will kind of come to you organically. And we'll talk about this a bit later. But yeah, the only time I was going to say, yeah, there are people out there who are not goal oriented. And as Josie says, kind of happy to meander along. And that is obviously a completely valid way of being. And the only time that those people run into trouble isn't because, you know, they should have goals and they don't. It's because they're not sure what, you know, a meaningful life looks for them.
Yeah, exactly.
So the second question Josie asked was, do you think strivers can often have a negative undercurrent to their need to achieve, or is this not that common?
I actually think the need to achieve is almost always negative. And I don't mean negative as in, I'm going to put a different word on it. I'm going to say that it's selfish, which it kind of is. So unless you're striving for something that's inherently selfless, like curing a particular disease or, you know, fighting for marriage equality or something bigger than yourself, I mean selfish as in self-fulfilling. So Kelly and I have been through this before. We're both strivers and we love gold stars and we're both very goal-oriented people. We also like helping people and creating a community of these amazing self-improvement junkies who help each other. But really, Kelly and I have spoken about this before, and the reason we do this podcast is because Kelly wants people to think she's smart and I want people to think I'm funny. So there are certainly so many selfless reasons why we do this podcast, but there's also some selfish reasons why we do it as well. And I was thinking about this before we recorded today, and I think that you actually need a healthy mix of both to get stuff done. So I think all goals need to have a positive and a negative to kind of work against each other in order to keep you actually moving towards your goal. So for instance, if I didn't enjoy or benefit from doing this podcast in any way, shape, or form, I wouldn't do it. So we can't have purely selfless motivation for doing this podcast.
Because that just leads to resentment.
It does. Exactly. Yeah. And similarly, if we didn't help people and our audience, and our audience didn't walk away having learnt something, we also wouldn't do it because purely selfish reasons and motivations for doing something are just as hollow as well. So I think in answer to that question of whether or not strivers can have a negative undercurrent for their need to achieve, I think everything you do has to be negative and positive, or otherwise without the other, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I think interestingly, I am doing some study in behavioral psychology at the moment, and one of the concepts raised in that is the concept of workability. So you know, the short answer is, do you think strivers can have a negative undercurrent? Yeah, of course. Is it not that common? No, it's super common. Because, yeah, it often a lot of striving comes from the need for recognition or for – and recognition sometimes is quite – yeah, it's a selfish kind of thing. Like recognition is a huge driver for me. And, yeah, I kind of look at it as neither bad or good. I just look at it as it's just a reality. It's just a character reality. But, yeah, something I think let's not think about things as bad or good. Let's think about things as workable. And interestingly, Matthew Pavlich, who's the captain, ex-captain of the Fremantle Dockers, which is the footy team I support, he was interviewed. He said he's retired and he was interviewed on the footy show this week. And what, you know, the interviewer kind of said to him, well, I've heard that you sometimes in the past use, like, you know, things you've read or things people have said about you to kind of motivate you to do things, and kind of made the intimation that, you know, you shouldn't be using those things to motivate you. And he said, you know what, like I played footy for 17 years. If I wasn't self-motivated, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But every so often, you draw inspiration and motivation from wherever you can. And sometimes it does come from negative sources. And, you know, if there's intent behind it and if it works for you. And so, yeah, so this, the behavioral psychology course I'm doing, they talk about workability. If it's something that works for you, then don't overthink it too much. Just go with it. If it's not working for you, if you're, say, striving because you're desperately seeking the approval of somebody else and then you don't get that approval, or you get that approval and then you realize that having that approval does nothing for you from a self-esteem point of view, then that's not workable. And then you need to look at the reasons why you're doing something and maybe coming at it from a different direction. But so there's, you know, there's a bit in there. Like I'm on one hand, I'm saying don't overthink it. On the other hand, I'm saying just, you know, be self-aware. So it's a difficult balance, but I kind of always bring it back to be very dialed into the why of why you're striving. It's very easy to get caught up striving for something because people like us do things like this. Certainly, you know, say if I'm a blogger, I'll do something because other bloggers are doing it. And then I'll realize, oh, hang on a minute, I don't want to go to award ceremonies or big meetups where there's heaps of people. Like, so catch yourself doing that and then take a step back, or doing things because of the expectations of others. Again, the key indicator of that is you'll do the thing, you'll achieve the thing, and then you'll feel very empty, and then you'll realize, oh, the reason I feel empty is because this wasn't actually something that was important to me at all. It was something that was important to like my mom or my sister, and now I know not to strive for, you know, now I know to check in the next time I'm striving for something and make sure the reason I'm doing it is because I want to do it and not someone else.
Yeah.
So yeah, so hopefully, I don't know if that answered that question very well. And then Josie asked, how do you even recognize when your goal setting is coming from a negative place?
So I think one of the most important things you can do is look towards your success markers. So if your success markers involve someone else, that's likely to be a negative place. For example, if your weight loss goal involves being thinner than someone else, that's negative. If your career goals involve earning more money than someone else, that's also negative. When you stop running a race against yourself, that's when you need to question where your motivation for that particular goal is coming from. And your goals should never really involve anyone else.
Yeah, I really feel strongly that if you're going to benchmark yourself against yourself and track your progress. Like I think quite often we don't track our progress. We don't keep note, or we don't credit ourselves with how far we've come in certain things. So, you know, it'd be very easy for me. Like I was telling Carly before the show today that I'm kind of in this recalibration period of my life now, because I've found that right now my life has just gotten very, very full, you know, and I need to actually start just rationalizing all the things that I've committed to, and I'm going to have to drop some of the things that I've committed to. Not this show. Just if, in case everyone's freaking out. I know I'm not breaking up with Carly on air.
Oh God, because we freaked out a few people with that one.
But yeah, so it would be, and you know, I write every week about overwhelm and about ordering your life and about managing life and creating white space. And it would be very easy for me to get down on myself and go, really, you've gotten to this place again where life's quite full and now you need to recalibrate. But the reality is, like 6 years ago, I spent like 2 months in a overwhelming state of overwhelm. Like it was, you know, I was on high, my body was on high alert for 2 years. Like that's crazy. Whereas right now at this moment in time, like I'm not even overwhelmed. My life is just very full. I've been able to recognize that, and I've gone like, there's no room at the moment for me to take on. If something really cool came across my desk right now, there's no room for me to take that on. Therefore, I need to dump a few things, and that's what I'm in the process of doing. Dump's not the right word. Drop a few things. Yeah, in case anyone who I'm dumping is listening to this. But yeah, it's just a rationalization. I look back now and go, wow, isn't it amazing how far I've come, that in 6 years I'm now able to, yeah, recognize the signs of things a little bit earlier, do something about it a little bit earlier. But most of us don't give ourselves credit for that. We just go, oh, I can't believe I'm here again, or I can't believe I've done this thing again. Like, yeah, be kind. That was a bit of a tangent back to Josie's third question, which was, how do you recognize when your goal setting is coming from a negative place? I'm a big fan of the gut check. So your gut will tell you when something's not quite right for you. And I just really think that it's important that when your gut is telling you something, it's important to check in with it and just dive a bit deeper to find out what it's trying to tell you. And it might not be necessarily that, you know, whatever goal you're striving for is an unworthy one. It just might be asking you to flip your thinking a little bit and see if you can find a more positive way to drive towards that goal. So, you know, for example, a weight loss goal, that might be driven by self-loathing, and that's obviously a very, very negative place for a goal to be driven from. So if you can flip that thinking and drive your weight loss goal from, say, I want to be able to run around with my kids at the park, or I want to be able to walk to school with them every day, or, you know, I want to be more mobile in 5 years' time when I'm a little bit older, that's a more worthy place. And it's just a flipping, you know. So it might start off with self-loathing, might be the driver. And if you're able to have the self-awareness to just flip it, so it's the same goal, but now it's coming from a more positive place, I think that's a really big win.
I also think it's important to realize that negative goal drivers aren't actually very powerful. So if you, because negativity isn't consistent, thank goodness, and some days your negativity will be a lot more powerful than other days, and some days it'll be completely non-existent. And it's also hard to manufacture negativity. Negativity kind of just comes from a place, like if I tried to have a negative day, that would be a lot more difficult than trying to have a positive day, because I don't know how to make negativity happen. But I've been studying and reading about how to make positivity happen, so I'm better prepared to do that. So for instance, if you are trying to lose weight and you're using self-loathing as your motivation, if you wake up on Wednesday and you don't feel fat enough to go to the gym, you're not going to go.
Yeah.
But if you reframe it so it's always positive, so I want to exercise so I feel better and I have more energy and I'm not going to die of heart disease by the time I'm 50, that's a much better place to be than I feel fat and disgusting, because you might not feel fat and disgusting enough to go to the gym on Wednesday.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And yeah, and I just think it's, if you set those more positive goals and then you also give yourself permission to take the small steps towards them, small steps, we're not going to make any massive big changes all at once. Because I read something very interesting the other day where they said, the reason big, massive changes don't stick is because the world and our bodies and our minds are always trying to get us back to kind of a state of equilibrium. So when we take a big, giant step away from that level of equilibrium, everything works to bring us back. But when we take small, consistent, tiny steps in the right direction, that leads to change that lasts. But as Carly said, if you're relying on, say, self-loathing to drive you towards weight loss, then on the days where you don't hate yourself, you're going to struggle to do it. Whereas if you're always driving towards a positive goal and making tiny, tiny steps towards that positive goal, it's a much, much longer lasting thing. So the final question from Josie was, this is a favorite one of ours, any tips on how I can find motivation again to try and strive for a new goal that's truly important to me and not about what other people think?
So Kelly and I aren't huge fans of motivation. We don't necessarily think it exists. I think people either do things or you don't. There's not really any such thing as motivation. I also think it's really important not to overthink it. So people spend a lot of time beating themselves up for not starting that blog or not joining a band or not auditioning for a show or not writing a play. And my philosophy is that if you really wanted to do it, you'd bloody well do it. I mean, you know, humans are so good at doing the things that they want to do. So if you haven't done that thing, then maybe you don't want to do that thing.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's kind of, yeah, so there's Josie's question and then there's some subtext to it. So I think answering Josie's question directly, I, like you said, you know, you don't need motivation. You just need conviction. If you're worried about, well, what will other people think when they see me driving towards this goal, I think you just need to seek out the words to use, because you go, okay, people are going to challenge me about this goal. So I just need to check in with my values. So I value a simpler life, or I value health. And actually, I saw something really interesting in the group today where someone said they live within their health means. So I'm not saying this is directly related to Josie, but she makes decisions so that, you know, she knows that if she pushes too hard in one direction or another, it's going to tip her over the edge with regards to her health. So she now makes decisions around living within her health means. And I think that's such a cool way that when people challenge you and go, oh, why won't you go train for this marathon? Or why won't you come and do this big trek with me? And then if you're able to go, that's because it doesn't allow me to live within my health means. Then they go, oh, okay. Yeah, I spoke about this with Brooke the other day. Like, I think one of the most important things when people challenge us is just having the right words, because people generally are very accepting of reasons. But if we don't kind of have a reason, and it might seem frustrating, it might feel like, oh, we shouldn't have to justify what we're doing to other people, or we shouldn't have to have a reason. It should just be good enough that that's what I want to do. But it's very difficult when people aren't behind you. If you kind of set a goal and your parents don't support it, or your partner doesn't support it, and then you have to do it all yourself, that's difficult. But if you're able to say, look, the reason I'm doing this is because of this, this, and this, then those people will get behind you, and you're not having to kind of, yeah, just justify to them all the time why you keep trying to find words to do it. You've already got those words. But the other subtext to Josie's question, I'm intuiting, I don't know this for sure, but I feel she's kind of a bit freaked out, like where when she's asking for motivation, she's feeling like, I can't believe I'm able to sit here and not strive towards anything. Clearly I need motivation to get going again. And to that I say, no, you don't.
Enjoy
it. Yeah, just enjoy it, because right now you're just in a very satisfied place and you're happy. Something will present itself to you. If you're that personality type, which you are, something will present itself. And right now you feel a little bit rudderless and like floating. And I actually wrote a blog post about this a few years ago. I just had Mia that year, and I was just about to have Mia, and I'd spent that year really working very hard on my writing. And I had this conversation with a mentor where she asked me, because I was just saying to her, like, what's next? What's next? And she's like, well, what do you want? And I kind of rattled off about two or three things. And she's like, well, you've got that, you've got that, you've got that. And I was like, so what she was saying to me was, you're exactly where you want to be. And my brain could not deal with that. Like, I was just like, but no, there's more. And she's like, yeah, there is more, but right now you've achieved what you set out to achieve. So how about sit with it for a while and enjoy it? And so I kind of just gave myself permission to sit with it. And actually it was really, really nice. And you know what? Like, probably about 3 or 4 months later, something presented itself, and then I was back into that striving mode. So yeah, it's not natural when you're a striver type. Sitting with something is very uncomfortable because we feel like what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? So if you're in a position where you don't know what the next thing is, that can be very jarring and make you feel like, oh, where am I going in life? But if you're willing to just sit with it and enjoy it, don't stress, like something will present itself, I promise.
I also think it's really important to realize that humans are very seasonal, and a lot of people tend to categorize and box people in by things that they're known for. So, for instance, I did a lot of theater when I lived in Canberra, and I did a bit of theater when I moved to Melbourne, and I haven't done a show in about a year or two. And people have started commenting on it, and they say things like, "You don't do theater anymore." That's not true. I'm currently not doing theatre. It doesn't mean I won't ever do theatre. But the person I do theatre with, my very close friend, she just got married, and she is, you know, working on a different facet of her career. I'm working on a different facet of my career. We're still great mates, and we still will absolutely do theatre again the second that it's viable. But just because we haven't done it in like a year or two doesn't mean we won't ever do it again. It just means that our focus has changed a little bit, and it's a non-theater season at the moment. And it's the same with anything. So for instance, eating healthy, occasionally you'll have a few months where your health isn't necessarily your number one priority, and you might eat pizza a few too many times in a week, and you might gain a couple of kilos, and people might say things like, "You've stopped going to the gym," or "You've stopped having salads every day." Well, no, you're just having a pizza season, or a sitting on the couch instead of going to the gym season. And I think people put too much pressure on themselves to be these really well-oiled machines, when really humans are like trees. You know, we lose our leaves in winter and then we blossom again in spring. And it's just really important to acknowledge that no one is consistently doing the exact same thing all the time for the rest of their lives. Just because you're currently not doing something and currently not striving doesn't mean you're not a striver anymore. It means you're having a non-striving season.
Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com. We also have an incredible Facebook group full of fellow self-improvement junkies. So if that's you too, come join us at facebook.com/groups/straightandcurly.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.